Welcome back to the official Atari Games podcast. This is Jason here, and I am very excited for this one because we are talking all things Lunar Lander Beyond. Joining me today, we got Alvaro Martinez, director of Lunar Lander Beyond.
Hey.
Welcome, Alvaro. How are you doing today?
Hey, thank you. Doing great.
Great. Thanks. I'm also joined by Jeff Cardenas, the executive producer on the title. Jeff,
thank you, Jason. I'm doing well, Jason. Thank you for the invitation to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for showing up. And we definitely had no technical difficulties whatsoever. We were absolutely flawless, as always. And last and certainly least, we are joined by CEO of Dreams Incorporated, Carlos Rocha. Welcome, Carlos. How you doing?
Hello, Jason. Thank you very much for having me. I thought you weren't going to invite me, but, you know, thankfully you did. So I'm just super excited. It made my afternoon.
Great. Now, look, you caught a bit of a stray in the credits because your credit in the title as like design consultant, which is hilarious as the CEO.
I'm happy Alvaro decided to include me in any way whatsoever. So.
Well, we're happy to have you. Now, before we jump into that and all things Lunar Lander Beyond, we got to start with a little bit of housekeeping here. First of all, this is the official Atari Games podcast. If you're listening to this on podcast services, please subscribe if you haven't done so. Review us if you haven't done so. That really helps. Give us 5 stars preferred. Honesty helps, but honesty under 5 stars is always the way to go. Also, join the Atari Discord. That is always linked in the description, so you click that link and join and discuss all things Lunar Lander Beyond or other things coming from Atari. And finally, now it is official. I mean, as of a few weeks prior to this releasing and in the future from when we're recording, try to wrap your head around that, Lunar Lander Beyond is officially coming out April 23rd on all platforms. That means PC via Steam and Epic, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Atari VCS. Woo! So go wishlist, pre-order your platform of choice. Also, there is a physical edition, including a collector's edition for Switch with a very cool steelbook and art book that showcases all of the amazing art done by the team at Dreams Incorporated, in addition to the animation team at Bewilder. So very cool stuff there. Lots of options for you. And yeah, look forward to that. That's it. That's all the stuff I have to say. I'll remind you about that at the end. Gentlemen, we're going to talk about Lunar Lander Beyond. But first, I got a warm-up question for you. And I had to think about this because I'm pretty sure I already asked prior the original question I wanted to on a different podcast, so I had to change it up. So here's what I'm going to ask you guys. Space. They're offering one-way tickets to space. You get to colonize Mars via Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, or your other favorite billionaire who may or may not have a space program. Are you going? What's your interest level?
Yes.
Okay, why don't we start with you, Jeff? Why? You're going? Why?
I will go for sure because, I don't know, it's you know, interesting, you know, be like at the first humans colonizing a planet. Like, you know, it's like at the beginning of the spatial exploration and all of that. I don't know. It's interesting. You know, it's highly probable that I will die because of, I don't know, whatever, you know, the thing happens. But yeah, it will be cool, you know, to be one of the first humans in Mars.
You'll be memorialized one way or another. What's that, Carlos?
One of the first dead humans on Mars.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Alvaro, what say you?
I don't know. I think I would stay here on Earth because Mars is a very harsh environment, and I'm an old guy, and now I prefer, you know, cozy places, and yeah, that kind of stuff. My adventuring time is over, you know. So yeah, I will stay here.
Right. Carlos, what about you? What do you say? You going? You taking the trip?
So as I've shared with Jason and the rest of the team, I hate flying with all my heart. It gives me panic attacks. So I probably might not go. So you know, I like the idea. I, you know, I would ask Jeff to send me selfies and pics for as long as he stays alive. But, you know, on my end, I would really much prefer to be on the safe ground, you know.
All right, fair enough. He'll send you a selfie and then you'll have it in like about a month's time. I assume things would travel faster than that, actually. I don't think I'm at that point anyway. As for me, no, I'm good.
But, Jason, if that's it's something that I tell to a lot of people. But I mean, I've gone to several places, but I hate flying. So if anyone, you know, cares to invent teleportation, you know, until that point, I will absolutely be there. I would love to get to know, you know, the technology behind all of that, behind everything that could sustain our livelihoods in our planet. I think that's fascinating. As a sci-fi fan, seeing all of the movies about Mars, about melting the ice core of Mars to create an atmosphere which is absolutely not real, but it happens both in my dreams and in the movies I've seen. I would really much enjoy to live those adventures with the safeguard to, at any point in time, just shoot my teleporter gun and be back in my room whenever I wish. So yeah. I would go.
What a fascinating answer. You want to go, but you don't want to take the trip.
Yeah.
Got it.
All right. Teleportation, yeah.
Fair enough.
I actually might go if I were Arnold Schwarzenegger and I was involved in a Total Recall fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
That way. But...
Yeah. In that case, you would get your ass to Mars.
In that case, yeah. I mean, save the girl and, you know, hunt the bad ones and save Mars and terraform Mars finally. Yeah. Total Recall. Yeah.
Got it. I mean, I don't even know how to top that. I think I'm out. Honestly, on the whole go to Mars thing, I would imagine the flight would immediately get me all sorts of status because of how long that trip is. But I think I'm good. Earth's pretty cool. I don't know how the food's going to be on Mars. That's why Carlos really wouldn't go, because he couldn't get good food over there on Mars. Like, what is the cuisine on Mars? That's going to be the question. And until that's answered, I'm out. All right. Well, thanks for entertaining that silliness. Let's talk about Lunar Lander Beyond. So here we go. So I'm going to start here. My little timestamp. I should find the timestamp here. Okay. Cool. So if you're watching the video, you will start seeing the gameplay, which I got going up on the screen right now. And if you're listening to the audio, why don't you head over to our YouTube channel and you can see all our pretty faces and see the gameplay in action here. Right now, I'm at the mission select screen. I'm just going to get this thing rolling. But while it's happening, before we start talking about the actual game itself, and the gameplay itself, I want to know about the origins. What is it about Lunar Lander that captured the intent, that captured the imagination of Dreams Incorporated?
All right. I'd say, you know, from my point of view, that the feat that we, as you know, as mankind, actually step on the moon in the 70s. That inspired the original Lunar Lander and also inspired our imagination. The feat itself, you know, the just thinking about how a human being could, you know, step on a celestial being that is like, I believe, more than 100,000 miles away. So, I mean, the greatness of that feat, that is what at least inspired me to, you know, expand and create the universe around the game. That was the first inspiration, you know, that I got.
Very cool. Yeah.
As a design consultant, I must say that it was so. You know, we were talking with you guys, with Ari, about, you know, different IPs. Particularly with Lunar Lander, there was something interesting about the fact that it was such a simple idea, such a simple game first But the emotions that were conveyed in that small experience were quite intense. So, you know, as with many games back in the day, when you played them, you felt a lot of stress, a lot of tension. It was fun, but that was not like the sentiment that you were thinking about all the time when you were playing. You were tense, you were focused, you were concentrated on trying to land in the best way possible without just crashing. And that feeling, that emotion, that was something interesting that we really wanted to explore, because that lends itself to a lot of narrative elements, which is, of course, at the core of the design that we have at Dreams Incorporated. We tend to focus a lot, for the people that know our work or our previous works, people know that we work a lot on narrative games, and we put a lot of messages on the games that we create. So we really wanted to convey a lot of that emotion through the mechanics of a new version of that original Lunar Lander. So that was a lot of the original inspiration that we got, not only to get the same feelings that you had, but amplify them to up to 11 with this new version of the game.
How did you go about like deciding, you know, like you said, the original game is so ridiculously hard and unforgiving. How do you strike that balance of creating something that's more approachable while also paying respects to the, you know, to the original itself? Like, it clearly is not trying to be the original, but at the same time, it does carry the Lunar Lander name.
All right. Okay. That's one of the, you know, trickiest part about designing a game that is basically not a sequel, but a reimagining of a classic. You know, how much we do preserve from the original game, how much are we going to change? As Colin said, you know, the core feeling that inspired the whole Lunar Lander design was tension. And, you know, back in the day, when I replayed the original Lunar Lander, and I played it more like as a designer rather than as a player, like I did when I was a kid, it was that I was like, of course, what the original designers wanted was to recreate the tension and the precise, you know, controls of the real landing missions. You know, you only have one shot to land on the moon, for instance. If you screw it up, probably the mission would have to be aborted. I don't know, right? So with that, to me, it was clear that the central element we would have to keep in order to preserve the original spirit of the game was the tension, right? So with that as a core, as a center, we expanded the gameplay. But also, this is not, you know, the 70s. We have more technology, which, you know, we can apply to game development. And also, players are not the same. There are new generation of players. So I'd say, you know, the main feature we added to the gameplay of Lunar Lander was the stabilizer. We could say that's the pivot, you know, the center of the gameplay was that little element, because it allows players to, I mean, if things go wrong, you can stabilize your lander and, you know, you can save the chip at a cost of fuel, but it is a way to save the chip. And so I thought, okay, classic gamers, classic players who want challenge, maybe wouldn't use the stabilizer at all, you know? And also, that's an achievement of the game. So, okay, given what they want challenge, play without the stabilizer, right? But what about those players that don't want that, you know, that level of challenge? All right, they're the stabilizer. You pay a cost in resources, fuel, but you can stabilize your ship and recover if you need. So it was, that's the, I mean, and the same game design principle. That's what we apply to many aspects of the game. But that's the core thing, you know, keep the tension, but give the players tools to actually manage the challenge, you know. And also, we add attention in other ways. And the main thing we added, you know, another way we add attention to the gameplay was the pilots. And that's the other, that's, I want to say that the key game mechanic of the game, the stress level. And what if we consider pilots? The original Lunar Lander, the pilot was you, but the pilot itself, him or herself, wasn't part of the simulation at all. It was you as the player and your lander. But what if we introduce pilots in the equation, you know? What if those pilots can feel fear and can feel and can be, you know, anxious, can, you know, make mistakes? And, you know, that thing not also, you know, made us like design the stress system and insanity, and, you know, one thing led to another and so on until we got the whole gameplay and story like designed and, you know, well fit together.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I've just been bouncing around. I was just going through the different pilots, and it's pretty cool. The trait system that you have on the pilot. So a little bit about the pilots, just to kind of give a little more color to that, is that each pilot is randomly generated. So the story, the way the story progresses, right, is you have your core cast, which is really your crew, but you're actually controlling the pilots in the landers. And the pilots, you know, they are procedurally generated, and they both by their looks and by their traits. So you want to speak a little bit to the trait system and how that works?
Sure. Yeah, okay. All right. So we now that we have the pilots in the simulation, and this is something this is an idea at the beginning of the project, there were one of the ideas was to have procedural generated levels, right?
Mm-hmm. I remember.
exactly. Yeah, but and it was cool, you know, on paper, but they have significant not only technical but also design challenges. So, but you know. There is something about procedural generated content and randomness that I really love. And I thought, okay, how can we add some randomness into the game? And then I remember when I was younger playing Magic the Gathering, which is a card, you know, those are card games. Like, yeah, I mean, you have your set of cards and you battle with your cards, you know, that trading card game. Is the name, you know? And I thought, okay, what if the pilots were cards? What if you have your deck of pilots and you, like a deck of cards in a poker or in those games, and you have to select your pilots, your cards from the ones you had on your deck, and that was the introduction of, you know, of traits. So I thought, okay. What is random in each pilot? All right, the appearance, okay, the name, okay, but also, you know, the important thing gameplay wise was the traits. So that led to a very, very cool decision when you have your pilots and each one has a set of traits, and you have to choose which pilot are going to pilot the lander. What pilots is gonna do the mission, right? And that should that you know, choosing element, that is strategic factor, proved to be fun in the preliminary tests, and that was the beginning of the trait system. But there is another thing. You know, imagine you got a pilot with a very, very good trait, an OP trait, right? And yeah, exactly. And you're playing, let's say, on insane difficulty, and your pilots actually die. you might be very, very concerned about, you know, I imagine you thinking about, okay, this is a mission. Should I risk my super OP pilot? What if I messed up? What if I screw it up? What if he or she dies? And that's something, you know, that I imagine, like, probably I'm wrong, but I imagine, like, mission control, like, officers, like, thinking about the crew on a, you know, a space mission. This is a really good astronaut. What if I screw it up and send this astronaut to his or her death, right? So I wanted the player to have that kind of feeling. And that's another thing, you know, that the pilots, the randomly generated pilots and the trace system try to emulate that kind of, or, you know, inspire that kind of feelings, like danger. You might lose your pilot.
Yeah, we should take a park it here for a second. I got to ask you guys, go around here and wonder what are either your favorite traits or a combination that appears when you've been playing and testing that were like, oh my God, this is awesome. Or like this completely broke the game because they're too overpowered. Cause I have one, I don't know, Jeff, we haven't heard from you. What do you think? You have some favorites?
I have to say that maybe, well, the dragonfly and the trade that you know, give you like a unlimited fuel, because that's like the OP combination for the game.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the one that everyone, you know, will choose eventually. But yeah.
Yeah, the dragonfly, I think I got one that was like, the dragonfly goes faster, and it uses fuel half as much, and yeah. I don't use fuel for any of my power-ups. That was wild, and I just blasted through the game in that run.
Yep.
It's not the easiest thing in the world, because there are a few like chase moments that can get you in a sticky situation, but that's what I found. Now, Carlos, what do you think?
I'm going to say something controversial, but I actually like the baselander. Because I think that it's heavily balanced, and I really like the idea of playing the game with the let's say with the base conditions that it feels very arcadey like, and I really enjoy that. So instead of just, you know, I actually, of course, I tried out all of the landers, and you know, you have a lot of surprises with the latest ones that give you just so much overpowered capacities. But there's something about that original lander that I really enjoyed. When I played and I tested the stabilizer, I felt that was a great moment. I really enjoyed just going at full speed, then being able to just stop at a certain point, but just enough so I could redirect my ship to another place. I really like that. I feel, for instance, with the dragonfly, it's a little bit too fast for me.
Too fast?
The spider is a little too fast.
Yeah, that one is.
The dragonfly, it's, I mean, of course, with the unlimited fuel, but if you don't have that, like, you're out of fuel, like, extremely fast. So, you know, I like my control. I like my statuses, like, you know, being very very balanced. So for me, I prefer the experience very naked, let's call it.
You made it weird. Alvaro, what about you?
Okay, a little bit of, like, you know, warning here. What I prefer is not the best. So guys, if you're looking like a meta or something, this is the wrong place. My personal preference is the base lander. Is the base lander combined with field saver and you know, less fuel consumption, and maybe the repair traits. You know, one of the auto healing ones. Because I like to, you know, take my time for the missions. I like to go slow, safe, but steady. And yeah, that's my personal preference. But that's one of the things I love when I talk to my fellow developers and about the game, and is that there is no general consensus on what is the best or the most delighted combination of, you know, a lander and traits. It seems that everyone has their own builds for, you know, to employ a term from the RPG games, you know, the build, the talent builds. Okay, this is more like that, your combination of traits and lander. There is no general consensus. Some of the QA guys love the spider, and those guys are brutally insane. I will never be able to play like those guys. I have they love the spider, and they go the Fast and Furious trait, and they go basically nuts. There are guys who love the dragonfly, especially those that don't usually play the games. I mean, the dragonfly is easy to fly at the cost of increased fuel consumption, so that's they love that kind of ship. Other guys, you know, prefer the secret ship. I won't talk about it anymore. You have to discover it in the game. And yeah, so that's the thing I love, because I feel that there is a combination for a different personality. If you are like, you prefer to play safe, there is a combination for it. If you want to take risks, you have your lander and your set of traits. So you can like play the game the way you want and the pace you want to experience.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I do like that. Anytime you have a situation where you have multiple options and can play to multiple play styles, the biggest compliment that could possibly be made is that nobody agrees on one best thing. And I think this is one of those situations. Like you were saying when you were in early on testing, what was it like? I think what you said, your nephew or something would just jump right into the, like only wanted to play as the spider because he thought the other ones were too slow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Well, he's a 12-year-old boy. And I mean, he usually plays things like Overwatch and, you know, Street Fighter, so fast-paced action games. You know, he's actually a grandmaster Overwatch DPS player. So he really likes fast action. And when he played like the Dragonfly, he was mad. Like, hold on. Hey, there's another chip. We'll try this one. And the only thing that he had fun was with the spider. And yeah, I mean, he crashed like four or five times. Then he suddenly was an expert. I was like, okay.
I think that was when, as well, was that when the hook shot? There was like a grappling hook on the spider for a while. That? And it was around then, I think, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I think it's interesting to talk about. You know, some of these elements that were left on the, you know, let's say on the cutting room floor. It's just an interesting look behind the curtain. You know, I think what we have here, what we're shipping, is a very solid, tight experience, and it doesn't really have any fat. Like anything that's there is useful for somebody or someone. But so it's interesting to know what was left out and why. I know I have one that I need to bring up. But I want to hear about the grappling hook or anything else you want to talk about.
All right, the grappling hook.
By the way, I just want to say that this is all part of the process. None of this is meant to be disparaging or anything like that, because, you know, this is how games get made. You know, you come up with something, you think it's going to work, but you never really know how something's going to end up until you actually play it and have it in somebody's hands.
Yeah, that's speedering development, basically.
Exactly.
There are a lot of similarities between directing a video game and directing a movie, and one of those is that you have to be conscious about probably half of the scenes you record as a movie director are gonna be or retaken or scrapped. And it is similar in game development. There are a lot of ideas, especially in the early stages of development. Everyone has ideas. Everyone. I mean, QA guys have a lot of ideas. Fellow programmers have a lot of ideas. Everyone has their own vision and their own ideas, right? And one of the things I remember Carlos telling me when, you know, in the early stages of the process is that a good director always listens to the ideas of the development team, but he tries to keep the vision of the game. You know? So what that means is that you need to listen to the team because they can have good ideas, but you are like a funnel, you know, you are like a filter, you know, you take an universe of ideas and through a series of tests, you filter the good ones with testing, with gameplay testing, with players. The grappling hook was a good idea. On paper, it was great. I mean, the spider is called the spider because of the grappling hook. Because, I mean, we wanted a lander with a grappling hook and, you know, feel a little bit like a Spider-Man, and, you know, grappling and swinging and, you know, grappling again and that kind of thing. But it proved to be really hard to play. And it required a very, very careful level design to make it work. And it seems like the trade-off was not worth, it was not worth the effort, you know. Because the surprise you might get using the spider's grappling hook didn't last enough, and it was too much of an effort to make it work. So at the end, we had to make that decision to, you know, like, no, this is not working. And that happens all the time, and you know, in all kind of games. And yeah, so that's the story behind the grappling hook. We won it, we tried, we tested, but it didn't work. So we have to delete it. That's
It was cool. But the other thing that comes up is that you have level design, right? And it has to work for all the types of ships that you have. So the moment you introduce one with the grappling hook, it really needed a lot of space to actually grab onto places. So the moment you balance something specifically for that, it might feel too easy or something for the other ones. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
It was cool. It was fun. But I definitely understand that one.
I love the grappling hook. I really did love it.
Oh, I hate it.
Wow!
And that's a beautiful thing about the, like, you know, the game. I mean, some people like some landers, but you know, hate another kind of lander. So it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah,
there's a lander for everyone. That's what matters.
Yeah. I have to bring up one particular thing that we did end up removing from the game. And this has to do with the sanity effects or the stress effects, right? So they're not, yeah, Jeff's nodding. He knows exactly what it is. Cause this is like, this is one where I was like, had a most visceral reaction to a thing. Basically, you have these effects. So I'm flying so well right now that I don't have any stress effects. So because I'm just awesome at the game. But let me just rub against this wall. And I'm going to get, let me see if I can get stressed here without breaking my ship. And we have these stress effects. And as you start flying poorly, you start hallucinating and seeing things. Well, that was originally one of the stress options. There was at one point two more other stress options. And that was rage, which was... you would get, basically, you would just randomly start thrusting without any warning. and then the other one was it would invert your controls. Seemingly on a dime. And that was, oh, here we go. There's one of the cool stress effects where with the pipe snakes. Yeah, there you go. Love those guys. And man, that rage one, yes, it did its job. It definitely fit the bill and was enraging, because for a game that requires you to, you know, land at the end, you would constantly be like, so if I'm going to demonstrate here, if the actual landing pad was here, I'd go in for the landing and I'd be like, nope, just kidding. You're now flying upwards. And then I would start landing again. They'd be like, nope, just kidding. You're going upwards again. And you just kept going. So yeah, that was one of those where, again, I like the concept. It was cool in concept, but difficulty is an interesting, is always a tough act to balance out. And that was one of those where it's just like, no, get me out of here. And that, oh God, oh God.
Oh my God.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Run, yeah. Run, Jason.
Oh. No. I'm out of fuel. All my showing of the, yeah. No.
Boom.
No.
Yeah.
All right. There, well, you if you're an audio listener, I just got sucked into it. Yeah, but it's that balance, right?
That was beautiful, Jason. That was beautiful.
Thank you. I almost recovered quite gracefully, actually. It was almost awesome. There's a interesting balancing act for a game like this when it comes to difficulty. Right, like the idea of a, you know, this genre of a gravity flyer, right? Like it's tough to balance, I think, because, you know, we had this game playable on the floor at PAX West, and mm-hmm. by the time you hear this, we'd have already have gone to PAX East and had a playable as well, and I'm sure the same thing happened where unsuspecting players who are not familiar with the genre or the original game, they will struggle with the controls at first. And that's just the nature of the beast, because games don't play like this anymore. And It's like, how do you balance that with also challenging difficulty ramp and challenge of the levels themselves without just frustrating players, especially as they're grappling with the controls, as they're trying to understand the game design, as they get a new ship and they try to wrap their hands around that. How did you approach the balancing? Because that's one that I do actually, I mean, I love the game. I love the way it's turned out. But one of the things that's really impressive that I hope people pick up on is the progression of things, how you seem to give players a chance to master the controls in the game before you actually put them into a situation where you have to do what I just did and having to navigate really tough situations or even having to explore. So you want to speak to that difficulty ramp of the game for people who might be like, this seems too hard for me.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the now extinct stress consequences, you know, the rage and the confusion. Again, one of those ideas that, you know, looks really good on paper that proved to be not—I want to say a disaster, because maybe those can work, but I say they're hard to balance, and the difficulty is easily the hardest thing to balance in a game. Especially because difficulty is a subjective matter, you know. Challenging means different for different people. So I remember, one of the things Carlos once told me in, you know, one of endless conversation we together have had about game design, that one of the best concepts in game design was teach, then test. Teach, test, teach, test, teach. You know, so it's like a loop. So basically, I was conscious about the difficulty of the original lander and the original game, but I didn't want to change that, because if I do, it is not a Lunar Lander game anymore. It would be something else, right? So the first was give the player a tool. All right, I'm going to keep the controls as they are in the original game, but I'm going to give the player the stabilizer, a way to undo a mistake, right? That was the first thing. The second is that at the first chapter, Luna is actually a training. The game is training you to fly like the general, like a gravity flyer, you know, with thrusters, try to give direction with the thrusters. But, you know, in open spaces. So there are many chances of recovering. Yep. So yeah. Is something
I don't know.
Their reaction to my gameplay.
My controller
briefly disconnected, so that's what kind of screwed me up.
We were just enjoying seeing Jason's ship is fried in lava. So
this is one of those testing moments in action. See, I was listening.
Yeah. So if you like, okay, you're in Mars. So basically, each planet serves as a test for the previous one. So in Luna, you basically get trained, and the last mission of Luna are a little bit challenging, but not too much. But Mars is where things get real, you know. And the first level of Mars is a very, very I won't say hard, but it's a test of the whole Luna missions, and so on. And you know, gradually the game introduces you to hazards, to more like tight spaces, to those moments you have where you have to, you know, to be fast and escape from the lava, you know, so it requires a lot of game testing, a lot of level design scrapping, because you know the level designer he built a version of the level in the development engine, and then we play tested, you know, and now this doesn't work, let's do it again and again and again and again until we got the progression, you know? Basically it's design
trial and test.
Trial and error. That is.
Yeah, but it's important to know that that's based on the QA that we did, QA field of the people that were testing it, but with the mentality of working towards a great pacing experience, a great paced experience, because as you mentioned, Jason, we tried at the beginning for you to understand the controls, to feel them, to get to know how well you can play under normal conditions, and then we start shaking up those conditions, and then we start presenting you with more challenges, presenting you with more elements that will disrupt that flow that you put yourself in. So, you know, it's going slowly into that ramp of difficulty where we really want to challenge you, but giving you all the tools for it to be a fair fight.
Yeah, I think I think that does a great job. That, you know, I just get it for if you watch the video, you'll see that I'm entering the first level of Venus. And I'll probably die pretty quickly, but we're gonna wrap up this demo pretty quickly. Once I die or succeed, we'll see. But yeah, I think you did a really good job of creating that escalation, especially when you get into later levels where it is less of a linear direction. It's less of a linear progression through a level, and it is actually more of like a traditional, the kind of level that you'd see in a game that's not like this, where you have to explore paths and find keys to open doors, and you're going in these different directions, and you're in more narrow corridors. So that really, it really does put you to the test in new and interesting ways that you might not expect from when you start the game. So I think it really does a good job at that, and keeps people engaged, like as they go throughout, because it's it's a very simple concept, and one that I'm just gonna go out on the blaze board. Pow! Oh wow! Thought that would have blown me up. 1% left. Oh, I probably have a second life ability here. Show me the pink elephant. Show me the pink elephant. Where are you? They're just watching me, taunting me. That's cool. I like that effect. There it is. That's the end. Yeah, so you guys really did a great job at that. And with that, I'm gonna stop that recording. But yeah, anything else that people should know, anything you want people to know about Lunar Land and Beyond if they're getting into it, and that's for that can go for all you guys. Like, what would you give people advice wise as they get into if they're going to get into Lunar Land and Beyond and they're not really too familiar with the genre, they don't know what to expect? What would you say?
All right. The only thing I would like to say, this is that regardless of your particular, like, I mean, let me organize my ideas for a moment. Okay, is that this is more than a game for us, and especially for me. Because even if, you know, the game may be criticized because we added the stabilizer, because it is not 100% the original experience, Lunar Land and Beyond, you know, and I respect that opinion, it was based on the old good memories from our childhood. You know, I remember playing the original game. I had the Atari 2600, although I didn't play and played it. I didn't play Lunar Lander on the 2600. I played on other games. I played in an arcade machine.
Yeah, that's the one I remember. Yep.
Yeah.
The thruster and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and those were the roots of the game. You know, the feeling is there. And for instance, the UI. Many people have asked me why the UI is the way it is. Why is so weird, so old? And the answer is because computer desktops in the 80s and 90s, they use that kind of UI. Watch Alien. See, look at the UI of the computer of the chip, you know? And you even if you, there is a little detail we added, that if you select the save game, you're gonna see a floppy disk, five and a half inches floppy disks, like we use in our childhood, the 80s, you know?
So depends on your TV size.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, so the spirit of the 80s is there.
Right.
And, you know, again, more than a game for us is a product of, is a love letter to that particular decade, you know, the 80s and the old Atari days and the arcades, and, you know, that's the thing I would like to say. I don't know, yeah, for Carlos.
In representation of younger people that didn't play the original game, I will say that you have to, you know, guys, you have to try it out, enjoy the game, and of course, embrace the challenge, because the game is challenging the player like all the time. So yeah, I have to say that you have to enjoy it and, you know, embrace the challenge. So
and get good.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, I get very emotional when I hear Alvaro talk about Lunar Lander and how important it is for him. But I know it's the same for the rest of the team. Everyone has put so much of them in the project, has put in so many hours, so much love, so much care for how it looks, for how it feels, for everything that we want to say in the experience, that just give it a try. Try the demo. We have demos that you can test out, that you can see if it resonates with you. Because if it does, you will definitely get a fantastic experience out of this. And you will see everything that we wanted to convey in this experience brought to reimagined in this new light. It definitely feels not only, let's say, I'm not going to say even loyal to that original Lunar Lander idea, but to those 80s games, it's not only about the movies, the UI, it's about the feeling of the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And you will see it. You will see it whenever you pick up whenever you rescue people, you know, at the stations, you will get flashbacks of those really interesting games back in the day. But of course, through the lens of a more modern design where it doesn't, I mean, it is challenging, but I'm going to say it's super fair. It doesn't feel like one of those extremely difficult arcade games from the 80s where we had to suffer through. It's of course a lot more forgiving, and it's just an experience that it's definitely worth having and sharing with other people. So test it out, see for yourself how is it that we try to transform that original feeling into this new game.
Yeah, well said. And you know, we didn't even touch on the like on the characters, and I know Alvaro kind of hinted at the themes early on when first talking about the approach to designing the game, but you know, we don't talk about the characters or the various planets that you go to and how that really expands upon it. Beyond is a very fitting name for it, as it does go beyond you know, the moon specifically, and then you go into all these other different locales which each have their own twist and visual identity. And like, you, if you noticed when you if you're watching the video, the winds of Venus blowing you over to the side and trying to strike you with lightning. It's rude as hell, but also very fun and interesting, right, when you get used to Mars. Yeah, it's very cool. And as a reference, and also talking about the throwback to the design, the fact that it's level-based, level-by-level games, it's not trying to be this grand open world thing. Mm-hmm. It is quite linear, and I mean that in the best possible way. Because to go from level to level to level to level, like if you're playing this on a Switch or a Steam Deck, it is an awesome portable experience because, you know, you can finish a level in a few minutes, assuming you don't die. But, you know, this is going to be one of those situations where I can't really convey the difficulty because you've been watching me play. I had to intentionally kill myself, except for that one time my controller disconnected. But for the rest of the game, it's like it comes pretty easy for me. And this was also something I experienced when we shipped Gravatar Recharged. And I thought, oh man, this is too easy. There's not enough content. People aren't going to be into it. And then all the reviews came out and they said, just like the original Gravatar, this is one of the hardest games you're going to play. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. And then anytime I watch people pick up the controller and they don't know how to control a lander, all right, well, guess that's how it is. Cool. Which is a good thing. I think it's a good thing, and that captures the spirit of the original. So, yeah, again, excellent work, guys. As Carlos was saying, you can play the demo now. It's still on Steam, so check that out. It should run on most PCs. So give it a whirl, and then pre-order it on your or wishlist it on your system of choice. Now then, let's wrap up the podcast as we do. We're a little long on this one, but it's been a great conversation, so I really appreciate the time, guys. But I like to end all these episodes by talking about what we're playing in our own personal gaming lives. I'm just going to go left to right from what I see on screen here. So, Carlos, why don't you go first? What are you playing? And I feel like three of us are playing the same game.
Super easy. I mean, you know me. Yeah, you know what I'm going to answer. And it's super easy. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I know purists will say, you know, it's not the original, it's Splinter Cell, whatever. I am enjoying it so much. I mean, I'm a huge fan of RPGs, and I'm really liking Rebirth. It's quite an interesting game. It has a lot of I feel it's still my Final Fantasy, you know? That hybrid system in the combat, mixing it with the other companions, I feel it's great. And even though I am very much of a DMC fan, I love Devil May Cry, I enjoy Final Fantasy Rebirth more than I did 16. I, of course, did 16 as well, but Rebirth feels that it hits just right.
All right. Alvaro, you're also playing Rebirth, right? So...
I'm a big fan of RPGs as well, so I'm playing Final Fantasy Rebirth and a little bit of Overwatch and a little bit of Helldivers, you know, just for keep myself in shape with FPSs.
Yeah, any of those in particular you want to speak to? Any thoughts, recommendations?
Helldivers is pretty good. Reminds me of the old Left 4 Dead 2 days. It's pretty good. I've been enjoying it. So, yeah, it's nice.
There you go. So you could look for Alvaro online and spread democracy with him. Jeff, what about you?
Yeah.
Helldivers 2, of course. I've been playing that for, right now I have like 80 hours. And of course I'm, you know, spreading democracy for all the planets that I'm visiting. So yeah, it's a pretty good game.
Yeah, it looks awesome. I wish that I could make time for that game, but Rebirth is apparently like 150 hours long, and the way I'm playing it, I'm on chapter 4 right now. I just got there. I feel like I'm terrible at this game and I don't quite get it. So if it's 150 hours, I think it'll probably be about maybe 200 for me. I don't think so. No, I'm just kidding. But like, they do create this kind of compulsion loop that makes you want to do everything, and it's just so pretty that you just feel good walking around and doing more of those things. But man, I've never felt dumber in combat. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. But you know, Carlos, to your point, it is one of those things that is decidedly not literally a remake. Remake in the, you know, capital R remake, Final Fantasy VII Remake, was more of a play on that word. And it all serves as a large sequel because this series has now been Kingdom Heartsified. And I guess we just gonna have to roll with it. And hopefully it doesn't get that convoluted and weird. But
it
I look forward.
Will.
Huh? What's that?
It will.
Oh, jeez. They say it's a trilogy, so hopefully it just ends at that point. But yeah, thanks. But let's wrap that up there. Again, thank you, Carlos, Alvaro, and Jeff. Yeah, we could talk forever, honestly. we've spoken a lot, and yeah, so it was great to have this extended conversation about Lunar Land. It would have been great to, you know, dive in deeper and talk about, you know, developing out of Bucaramanga in Colombia, and
we'll have time.
You know,
we'll
your prior time. Game, Chris Tales, and how that was like the. And how Lunar Lander Beyond was probably before it was called Lunar Lander Beyond, it was probably the fastest approval we've ever given for a pitch at Atari. So that was pretty cool. And then to see it is to think about it from that perspective to where it is now. It's really exciting stuff. So, thanks a lot for all the hard work.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Here's the release.
That you like what we're creating and all the effort that we've put into this.
Totally. And I look forward to you all seeing that firsthand on April 23rd when Lunar Lander Beyond comes out on, again, all those consoles and PC. So check that out then. Again, if you've gotten this far, that means you probably like what we're doing. So please give us a review and subscribe and tell your friends about the podcast. And that's it. Right. Of course. Always like to end with this. Carlos, where can people follow you if they wanted to? Are you on the socials? Are you anywhere? Or Dreams, perhaps? Where should people go to if they want to see what you're up to?
Dreams Incorporated, both on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the socials, the usual socials. Just look for us. We usually show a little bit of what we're doing. Not the most active on social media, but we really do love to share a little bit of what we are creating at the moment. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Good stuff. Alvaro, what about you? Anywhere you want people to find you? Walking the streets of Bucaramanga?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, like the best social media user, so you can like drop me like an email to alvaro@incorporated.co. And yeah, that's it. If you want to, like, you know, maybe have a conversation about design, or you know, I'm at the Atari server in Discord, so you can like send me a private message there and, you know, start talking.
Love it. Let's send him some fan mail. Jeff, what about you? Anywhere you want people to find you, or you could just stay hidden?
Yeah, everyone can find me in Instagram, Twitter, or X. I don't know how to, you know, name it. And of course, Facebook, but no one uses it anymore. As Jeff Cardenas, that's all. You can find me later.
I'll have those links in the in the description below as well. So follow them, say nice things, send them some love. You could follow me at Jays of Doom. You could send me love or hate. I don't, whatever, you know, it's fine.
Or both.
And yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Bye. Bye-bye.